Hey, g'day there, fellow humans. Mark LeBusque here for the Simply Practically Human podcast. My guest today was speaker, award-winning author for Best Leadership Book of 2020, and the founder of Quietly Powerful, Megumi Miki, who is starting a thing, I called it, a thing about the importance of being quietly powerful and also valuing a quieter side and the impact that can have in leadership. I'm not going to give too much away. I'm always too bloody loud and boisterous and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to hand it over to you, the listener, to be absolutely mesmerized by a person who I say is thoughtful, curious, calm, and very kind. We'll catch you at the end.
Life can get pretty complicated. In the Simply Practically Human podcast, Mark LeBusque talks to incredible humans to see the way forward more clearly through the complexity in the world and in our heads. Let's get ready to thrive.
Hey, I'm delighted to be joined today by speaker, award-winning author and founder of Quietly Powerful, Megumi Miki. Megumi, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
This is a fascinating topic, and I know we exchanged a couple of LinkedIn messages a few weeks ago about some of the trends that are happening in this space of leadership and, you know, the quietly powerful way of leading, which we'll get into. But I always start with, it's a bit of a thing for me around first impressions. And I know I met you for the first time, I think it was at Kettle Black at a coffee shop or a little coffee shop in.
Yes, I do remember meeting at a coffee shop.
Yes. And I wanted to give you the first right here of, I love to get first impressions. If you can remember back, it's going back some time, what your first impressions were of Mark LeBusque.
Well, I had to think back when we met, but I do remember we had a really friendly conversation. So friendly is probably the top of mind. And then also what you talk about, you know, bringing humanity to leadership and management, I think it's just wonderful and the passion that you bring to that. So that's probably the first two things that popped into my mind when I thought back.
Thank you. And my turn now, I had kindness. You were very kind and a very generous person. Calmness, like you're really, really calm, thoughtful, and really curious, like heaps of curiosity. And that's, I guess, those things, first impressions sometimes we're like, oh, were they right? But as I've followed you, and I do follow your work because your work's amazing, I keep seeing those things all the time. Now, whether that's confirmation bias for me going, oh, it sits there with me, but they were the things that I saw in you.
Thank you.
Quietly powerful as, I guess, your brand and the thing that you've built, which is fantastic. What's it all about? Because I look at this and I say, I was told when I was bad, Mark, as a manager, be bold, be brash, be loud, be hard, be charismatic, and be direct, confrontational, and all these sorts of things. So,
really?
Yeah, which sort of, that's the way I got dragged up as a manager. What really got you into this space? So I have a bit of a backstory here. What's the backstory that finally got you into this space here?
There's probably a personal part and a professional part. So the personal part is that, as you picked in your first impression, I am a quieter person. And, you know, often people do tell me that I have a calming influence, partially because of my quieter nature, but partially because of my Japanese non-expressive face, I think. But that's a whole other story. And as a quieter person, and also I do talk about this in my book, actually, the Quietly Powerful book, it's not only my personality and my style, but it's also how I was brought up. So, you know, being brought up partially in Japan and partially in Australia. So I went back and forth a lot as a child, but also by Japanese parents. There was an element of, you know, you don't speak up unless you're asked, or, you know, those sorts of conditioning that happens when you're being brought up in a certain culture. And also the other thing is, because I moved around so much in my younger years, I went to 8 different schools in 3 different countries.
Wow.
That meant that I my survival mechanism was to be quiet and sort of go underground and, you know, not to be noticed too much, because when I did get noticed, I got picked on. So, you know, it was dangerous to stand out. So that was very much my thing, to not stand out. And I tried my hardest, but I still got picked on, because, you know, when in the 70s, yeah, late 70s in primary school in Australia, there weren't that many Asian kids. So I certainly stood out, even though I tried not to. So, yeah, I certainly got picked on for the foods I ate or whatever. It's so silly. The silly thing, like, you know, be picked on bringing in some nori, the seaweed nori.
Yep.
And now it's everywhere, right?
Exactly.
So my daughter takes nori into her school for lunch and everybody's jealous, well, as I got picked on. So that's the difference in the decades, I suppose.
It's interesting how that's, I guess that's a real generational thing because like what we've become accustomed to now in this country is that diversity of culinary delights, which I go back, if I went back to my time in the late 70s in primary school when they used to give you a little carton of milk and sit in a circle and like we wouldn't even think about eating any of that. What do those people eat? And that's well, that's interesting. So you learnt to be quiet because it was a survival mechanism.
Yeah, it's a survival mechanism. So that was certainly one of them. So personally, that's more that side. And of course, when I went into the workplace, that wasn't going to work. So I had to work really hard to reverse that conditioning, if you like, on top of being a quieter person anyway. So it was really difficult. Particularly, I started off my career in management consulting. And in that world, you go into organizations as a, you know, 20-something year old with no knowledge of business, you get put into organizations and speak to senior management. And it's like, you know, you have to look confident and, you know, it felt exhausting.
I was just going to say, how did you show up then? Was there a moment where you go, I now need to be this Megumi? What happened? What did you do?
It wasn't a conscious thing at all, but I just tried to emulate whatever, you know, other people were doing. And I still got told you need to be more confident and all of those things that often you get told. But, you know, I managed. I was good at adapting, and as you do. So I managed, but I just found it so exhausting. So personally, that was the case. And then professionally, the reason that this came up was I have worked with quietly powerful leaders, which we'll go into later, that I loved working for. And also, I started to notice, because I've been working in this leadership and organizational culture world for over 20 years, you know, you look at different leaders and leadership teams and you look at those people who have great wisdom and insight and different perspectives and you think, why aren't they being listened to or why aren't they being promoted into leadership positions? And I remember actually working in one organization, so I was in an organization, not as a consultant, and I had a colleague. It was reasonably senior management level. They got put into, you know, those executive assessment centres or whatever.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a big organisation. So they did this executive leadership assessment centre thing for a whole day. And one of my colleagues had to go through that. And she was of the quieter type. But what I saw in her was absolutely influential because she had to deal with very senior stakeholders and manage a whole change process. And over a few years, she made enormous grounds with the change process. So I was thinking, oh, surely she'll be fine. And she came out of that assessment center in tears, being told that she has no leadership potential.
Yep.
And I just go, how can you assess somebody in a day when she's made enormous transformation over 2 or 3 years? You can't do that. And so it just got me really frustrated. So I thought, you know, there's something here that we're really missing in this world of leadership and culture. And then, of course, I read Susan Cain's book and that got me thinking as well. And so there's lots of different things that got me thinking, so personally and professionally.
I love it how you've used your lived experience to shape up what you're doing. Those executive assessments, did you ever have to do one of those yourself?
No, luckily not. Well, I have. In a different context. So it wasn't like a leadership assessment centre, but a facilitation assessment and things like that.
I remember doing one of those assessment centre things and they have the patterns like triangle, square, circle, what comes. And I've got no idea with that stuff. And I just, they came at me and they said, you failed that miserably. You you can't think outside of what you see in front of you.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Oh, that's like a psychometric thing.
And then I was told that you will only ever be operational, directional in your life.
Wow.
You have not a strategic bone in your body. So I'm fair enough.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I'm out here doing what I do today. So there you go. So talk a little bit about, I guess the basis behind Quietly Powerful, so you've, first of all, you said you loved someone you worked with that showed those qualities. Mm. What was it that you loved in that person?
There's something about giving space that I loved. So they never micromanaged. They were there if you needed them, but they didn't take credit for everything. They made sure that the team got credit. So it was like they gave space for people to shine. And I think that's a marvellous quality in a leader. And I see that time and time again. In fact, I was running a Quietly Powerful program in an organisation just before this call. And about, I don't know, 7 or 8 of them were in the call. And quite a number of them talked about their passion is about seeing others succeed.
Yep.
You know, it's like it's not about them. And so because quieter people generally, so this is a generalization, not everybody, but generally don't crave attention, it means that they're quite comfortable for other people to take up the attention, the space, the credit, the, all of these things. And to me, that's a remarkable leadership quality that allows an organization, a team to really do well.
When you said you've just run a little Quietly Powerful program, I immediately, the old curiosity went off and I went, how did people pick to go on the Quietly Powerful program? How do you know who to send on that? What's the characteristics?
So it's a tricky one because initially people will go, well, why are you picking me?
Yeah.
because there's a stigma around quiet, and that's what I want to break. Say, well, actually, quietness has some fantastic qualities. But what this particular organisation has done, which is really fantastic, is they put it in as part of their talent program. And they get their managers to talk to these talent members to say, you know, you've got fantastic potential and you have a quieter style and I want you to make the most of that. That's how they couple.
I love it. That initial reaction of, oh, why am I going? You know, I see a bit of that in the room too, people with their arms folded a bit of times going, what are you trying to fix?
But exactly.
I love it how you said breaking the stigma. So what are you starting to see that is breaking the stigma? Because this is you're the expert in this space, award-winning author in this space, Business Book of the Year 2020. What are you seeing that is breaking the stigma down?
I just have to remind people, actually. It's not that people don't know it. Because if I said to you, you know, can you think of somebody who doesn't say a lot, maybe quietly spoken, but when they do open their mouth, you really listen because they're so insightful, you can think of someone, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So, or people who are perhaps a little understated and they're in a senior leadership position, but they're highly influential.
Mm.
Yeah, you can think of people. So they exist.
They do.
It's just reminding people that they exist and that quiet approach can be really powerful.
I love how you reminding people and reinforcing that this is a true leadership quality. I'm also going to say this. I'm a huge fan of your work, so I drop your name a lot. When I'm working in rooms with people, seriously, there'll be some people listening to this going, this is the person. I go, there's an amazing leadership, I'm going to say consultant, I don't know whether I use that term, but out there, called Megumi Miki, who talks about quietly powerful leader. I call it leadership. I'm going to drop the L now. But I say that's what you're showing today. You are every time, when you said this before, Megumi, when people, they don't talk often, but when they do, they've commanded the listening and the hearing in the room.
Mm.
I'm coming across so many of those. And I love what you're doing because it's starting to give people the confidence to think they can step into this crazy world of leadership, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So well done.
Thank you. And I suppose from a professional point of view, it's really great to see people recognize their own potential, because that was the thing that you said in your message when you first asked me for this podcast is, you know, you're coming across people who don't see their own potential and you see it.
Yep. And I hear those stories every day. And how does that make you feel when you're creating this movement around Quietly Powerful? How does it make you feel when you see people respond when they start to realize that what they're showing and the traits they're showing are actual leadership? How do you feel about that?
Oh, I love it when people get that and, you know, the pennies drop, whether it's in a presentation or in a program. You know, I just start to see that they sit up a bit taller and they feel good about themselves. And so I think at an individual level, it's fantastic. But I guess more on the bigger picture, I see we need more of these leaders.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're on the same page with this. We've had some terrible leadership around the world and we can't keep on going like that. So we need leaders who are about others. And, you know, to me, that is what leadership is about. So if these quieter people and quietly powerful people can step into leadership, then I'd love for them to do so.
I love it when someone segues me into a beautiful question that I wanted to ask you, which is like sharing your thoughts on that traditional leadership persona and how it's still impacting on the world and what is like what I call a more human world. So how is that old style still impacting on real leadership effectiveness?
It's almost like we're stuck in a stereotypical military model of leadership. I think that's what it is. You know, that in a crisis or if you're in a military operation and you need to be telling people what to do and telling people off for doing things that's not in your command and things like that, that makes sense because you're in physical danger and everything else. So I'm not saying it's completely unnecessary because I think there are times when, you know, you need that directive authority of telling people what to do type leadership at times. But I think in most cases these days, particularly when we're navigating through complexity, it's really unhelpful. What's really interesting, though, as I refer to the military model, is that is a stereotype because as part of writing my book, I interviewed a military leader. He was a retired Rear Admiral of the Australian Navy. And, you know, he held a very senior position and he's also a quietly powerful leader. And he said the ones that were loud and brash and always told people what to do and didn't listen, that's probably a key word, didn't listen, often got into trouble. Because what happens even in a military context is when you're out in a military operation, absolutely you'd need to take up that authority and tell people what to do, yell at people at times, you know, you'd need to do that. But that's about 10 to 20% of your leadership.
Yeah.
The rest of it is about listening to advice from a range of people, listening and considering and thinking through strategy. And in order to do that, you actually have to zip it, listen, think, and it's not about telling people what to do. And so if you're taking up too much space, you're actually going to get into lots of trouble. So it actually flipped my thought about military leadership as well.
I want to overlay that with the old management system, which has pretty much been based around we promote those who are technically competent. And we continue to promote them because they and again, I think a bit like the military, technical competence is really important, but it's flawed when it continues to be the way we promote the next level of leadership into the world. What are some of the things that you're doing to help organisations to understand that there's more to quietly powerful than just being technically good at things?
There's a number of ways I can think about that one. Because I think technical competence is important, as you say, to a degree. But I think where it gets stuck is if leaders or if people get promoted into leadership and they think that they have to know everything.
Yep.
That's where you get into trouble because it's not possible for you to know everything, for one. And it's also counterproductive because they get into too much of the detail and they end up doing their team's jobs. So I suppose being able to paint the picture that leadership is more about bringing the best out of the team, and that doesn't always come from just technical competence. So I've done a number of different programs around coaching, using coaching as a leader, and, you know, quite practical things that people, leaders can do, to talking about quietly powerful leadership, which is about enabling and empowering teams to do what they do best. So, yeah, there's probably a number of different ways you can tackle that one.
Have you got a favourite, you don't have to go into names and pack drill, but have you got like a favourite, most proud story of someone or a team or an organisation that has really started to both embrace and now flourish in this quietly powerful movement?
There was one person quite recently that we've been chatting and there was some things that we talked about that really shifted the way she thought about herself, what she can do differently. And there was a couple of moments where she said, that's life-changing.
Yep.
And it seemed like a simple thing, but for her it was life-changing. And I think that's probably, well, for me, it's very fulfilling. But then what I'm proud of is what she did with it afterwards.
Yep.
And so she went about, and it was something about talking about herself. She just felt really shy about talking about herself in interviews and in different situations where she needs to. And, yeah, she just had this huge insight about it's actually not about her. And, yeah, she started to talk more, and she's feeling much more authentic about it, being able to talk in ways that works for her rather than feeling like she's bragging and all of those things. So, yeah. So I can think of a few people like that, but that person is a recent one, so I can think of.
As you were telling the story, it's almost like you feel the weight that's being lifted from that human being, and then the life-changing piece obviously makes you proud. Hey, every time you've said something, I'm like, something else comes into my mind. Do you come across people who are a bit more boisterous and extroverted outside the workplace, but then they come into the workplace and they feel like I have to be this way?
Yeah.
And because I'm sure there's some people listening who go, "That's he's talking about me now." How do you help those sorts of people? Or do they need to have the different roles and personas? Or what do you say to them?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, because I have had, you know, I've been running these programs publicly and in organizations for a while, and I'd say about a quarter of them are personality-wise, they're extroverted, more on the extroverted side. So Quietly Powerful is actually not about introversion, extroversion. I'd like to suggest it goes beyond that. And it's about valuing your quieter side. So everybody has a quieter side, if you think about it. And, you know, the fact that as human beings we talk about peace and quiet means that we value that to a degree. It's just that we forget. And particularly in the context of leadership, we forget. And so for me, for people who are quiet, boisterous and everything else, it's about finding that quieter side within them and using it well and using it in a way that works for them. So often in a workplace, it might look like, you know, for example, you're sitting in a meeting and you've got some senior people in a room and you feel really anxious and so you can't speak up. So overcoming that anxiety and being able to ask a question or do something that is valuable to the group is a quietly powerful approach rather than just being quietly disempowered. So I'm shifting people from being disempowered to quietly powerful.
I love the change to value and valuable. In fact, you just gave me the episode name, which is Value Your Quiet Side. I hadn't thought about that, the getting people to think of that. So let's get into some practical tools and tips now from the expert, because you are the expert in this stuff. And for people to start to, even for individuals to start to value their quiet side more, what's some tools and tips you could give them? Or it could even be about organizations here at Megumi, where it's like, what can you do to help these people to rise up and not undervalue what they bring?
So I think at an individual, one of the things that I work really hard isn't the word, quite deeply with people, is around appreciating themselves fully. And what I mean by appreciating themselves fully is going beyond the whole idea of valuing their strengths.
Yep.
Because that's only partially appreciating yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, every human being has strengths and weaknesses, and that's okay. So the work that I do with people is about appreciating fully and actually looking at both strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes weaknesses, depending on the context, how useful that is as well.
Yeah.
So again, I talk about in my book just a really simple example, because I grew up in different countries, as I mentioned. I did miss a chunk of schooling in Australia, so I feel like my vocabulary is a little bit missing.
Yes.
I still feel that. And so whenever I speak or whenever I write, I sort of think, oh, I'm not a great speaker and communicator because my vocabulary is a bit limited. But what I realized was people tell me that I communicate clearly, and I realize it's because I only know a limited amount of words, so I just speak simply or write simply.
Yep.
And so, you know, you can see that in certain circumstances that's useful. So even though I could see it as a weakness, there's an element of usefulness in it. So then you can appreciate everything that you have rather than try to hide it or try to make it wrong. So that would be one thing about appreciating yourself fully. Don't discount some of the things that you might see as a weakness or other people have told you as a weakness. So that would be the main thing, I think, for quieter people or anyone really to think about, you know, what they can bring. Organisationally, I think it's back to what we talked about reminding people about the value of quietness or a quieter approach to leadership in particular. And think about some of those, think about and showcase potentially some of those quietly powerful leaders in organisations to say they exist and they are effective and it's a different way to a traditional way of leading, but it's very, very effective. So that's part of the reason why I continue to interview quietly powerful leaders and put it on video and sometimes post it on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just reminding people because they're quieter and because they're less likely to post or to show up and say, you know, look at me, they're very less likely to do that. You actually have to look for them. But when you do look for them, they're there, absolutely there.
And the third one, perhaps, something else that would be useful?
I think in more in the leadership development and leadership frameworks and things like that, just learning from quietly powerful leaders what they do and what value they bring. So a little offshoot of quietly powerful that I've been working on with a couple of colleagues is, I don't know if you call it a movement or a project or an organisation, I'm not quite sure, but called Leaders Who Listen. So every single quietly powerful leader spoke about their listening as their key leadership strength. And more I think about it, the more I look at those leaders, I can see why. And so we're working on helping organisations to recognise the value of that and also helping them develop a better listening environment and also leaders who listen better. So that's been sort of the offshoot of the quietly powerful work. And it's interesting, organisations are starting to go, oh, okay. Hadn't really thought about it that much, but you can see the costs of not listening as well.
Oh, absolutely. We become very caught up in our own perspectives and very, very quick to give the answer. Hey, I love this idea of showcasing quietly powerful. I think that because we don't tend to showcase that. We tend to showcase at the other end, which brings me to another question. I think I've asked you lots of questions without notice. Have you ever had to work in reverse where you've had to work with someone who's of the old model? It might be bad, Mark, back in the days when he was in his 20s and he had to, I was a look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. For someone who might be listening to this, who's just had a quick glance in the mirror and gone, I think they're going to talk about me right now. What advice or what have you been able to do to help those people to realise that sometimes it's good to, I'm going to say, shut up and listen?
That's exactly the advice that the military leader said to a group of people. It was at the book launch, actually. So Simon Errington is the military leader that I talked about. And at the book launch, I had a few of these leaders up front. And one of my extrovert colleagues said, oh, what do you say to us extroverts? And what do you say to people who are maybe not so quiet? And he said, shut up and listen. So there you go.
I love it.
But I think also for those people who are not so quiet, they do have a quieter side too.
Yes.
And I think we forget, as you know, you're talking about a human manager. As human beings, we do need quiet.
Yep.
You know, to have some peace and quiet, have that calm, have that stillness, you know, the whole movement around mindfulness, meditation is all about that. So I think it's costly to individuals to forget the value of quietness. So I think it's just reminding people, going, actually, regardless of your personality, regardless whatever your style is, do value that and make sure you create some space for that.
Shut up and listen. Very, very wise words from the gentleman from the military. You said it's costly to not embrace this. You do such good research as well and whatnot. I've been able to work out around there's a behavioural cost that I think could transfer into a financial cost. Have you got any thoughts around that? What are the costs to organisation by not valuing quietly powerful?
Now, I can't put a number on it. I haven't done that level of research, but there's lots of angles to that, actually. So if as an organization, if you're not valuing quietly powerful talent, potential talent, so they're quieter, but they just need a little bit of encouragement and development, then you're just missing out on this huge talent pool.
Yeah.
And in this current world of talent shortage and everything else, you're just wasting these people. And it's a multiplier effect. And I'm actually writing a paper on this right now. It's a multiplier effect when you waste this talent, because they might leave, they might disengage and so on. But when one person like that leaves, they leave a hole, because they often are quite invaluable contributors in the background in some ways. You know, they often do some invisible work that people don't always appreciate. But when they leave, you go, oh, my God,
we've got
this big hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then others who are like that go, well, you know, here we go again. We've wasted another talent. And so it's a multiplier in my view.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge cost in terms of a talent angle. But I think the other side of it too is if you're not developing quietly powerful leaders, then you're missing out on this leadership style that allows the organization, the teams to flourish, as we started off with. If you recall, you know, some of the leaders I work with that I loved really created the space for teams and organizations to flourish. And by nature, because of that, it's about being inclusive and empowering. And, you know, if you're not developing those sorts of leaders, then they're just not going to get the best out of the teams and organizations.
And it's really another, as you're talking then, Megumi, I'm thinking it's another way of embracing diversity and inclusion. It's another, and like you putting the spotlight on it is a really important, because usually the traditional things around that, we've got some traditional things we talk about in inclusion and diversity, but here's another layer to throw in that perhaps organizations who aren't thinking about this need to start thinking about it some more.
Mm. Just on that, it's a bit of an intersection.
Yep.
So, you know, talk about intersectionality in diversity and inclusion. That so often what I find is that the people of a minority background, if you like, often do come to my talks.
Right.
Because not only they may have a cultural conditioning that causes them to be a bit quieter, but also when you're in the minority in a group of people, you tend to go quieter anyway. You feel quietly disempowered because you are the only whatever it is, and it's really hard to speak up when you are the only whatever it is.
Yeah.
So to me, there's an intersection about how do you support people who may feel like they're in the minority to have a voice in a powerful way, but it's not about being loud.
I think there's something to be said there for education and awareness, because as you've spoken today, you've shared your story, which I loved about, like, you know, I feel like my vocabulary range is not as broad as it needs to be. I've heard that in the room a lot with the quieter people. You know, English is my second language, and I hadn't really given it much thought early on. It's like, yeah, come on, just you'll be right, speak up. But I haven't been there. So I think showing that empathy too now and understanding that people can get somewhat embarrassed if they might use a word out of context. And then they're like, absolutely. People in the room be like, oh, here we go again. It's Mark, that guy with a French name, obviously doesn't know what he's talking about thing. So I think that's something for everyone listening here to keep in the back of their minds. Hey, I'm really looking forward to this next bit. This is about simple and complicated and complex. And I have a very simple view that I think we overcomplicate things and we try and make them complex and whatnot. Now, I'm also going to say I loved it. And the listeners need to know this, because I think this says volumes about you. You wrote to me yesterday and go, I don't think I particularly agree with your idea around simple and versus complex. And I shot you back a note going, that's exactly what I want. I want people to come on and have a different perspective, because that's how we learn more. So my simple view is we are romanced by the flame of complexity and complicated and we try and go there, whereas we should just be simple human beings who work stuff out and don't try and split the atom. What are your thoughts about that?
So I actually think it's both.
Yep.
That there's a tendency to overcomplicate things, particularly for things that are known and well established, you know, being human and being respectful, all those things that you just talked about. I get that, you know, don't make it too complex. It's actually a very simple, basic human thing. So I get that angle. But what I do find, though, is people simplifying the complex, and there's a danger in that. So I think diversity and inclusion will be a really good example of it, because since we're just talking about it, you know, we try and simplify it to these categories.
Yes.
And it's so not that. It's yep. There's so much more to it. There's intersectionality, there's different dynamics, there's power and rank, there's all sorts of things that go into that and the dynamics around it. So by simplifying it, oversimplifying it, and trying to fix things in a technical manner, if you're familiar with the whole adaptive versus technical, you know, trying to put in what's been done before and it doesn't seem to be working. So yeah. To me, that's what got me thinking about, no, I think there are things that are inherently complex that we do need to look at it in a complex way.
I love that. People ask me, why do you podcast? And I say, because it's the greatest learning laboratory that I've had for the last 4 years. And then I learned some more then around intersectionality. I love adaptive leadership. I love the Heifetz-Linsky stuff, by the way. So maybe I should go back and have a look at the difference between a technical approach to a challenge and an adaptive one. You've just sparked me there. So how do people who are listening and they like, I need to get the books, I need to get to a program, and one of the, you do virtual and in-the-room programs?
It's mostly virtual, actually.
Lovely.
Yeah, I do in-person, on-demand, if requested, but a lot of it has been virtual. So the public programs are all virtual, and the organisational one that I'm doing, the clients in New Zealand. So
there you
we
go.
Just said, well, let's just do it virtual.
So how do the listeners connect with you and get hold of information about the amazing work that you're doing in this quietly powerful space?
Thank you. So quietlypowerful.com.au is the website, and there's a lot of information there about the speaking that I do, the programs that I run, and articles and different resources. There's quite a few free resources there too for people to look at. And I'm quite active, as you know, on LinkedIn as well, so people will see some of my work there. And, that's probably the two main ones that if you were looking for some information. Yeah, by all means, please connect with me on LinkedIn. I like connecting with people and exchanging ideas. So, yeah, I would love to hear from people.
Reach out to Megumi and connect with it. Now, I wanted to finish with this. Leadership Business Book of the Year 2020. Describe the moment when you found that out. How did that feel?
Oh, I was blown away, because there were so many other amazing books there, like Zoe Ruth won the total one. So I was just the one category. But to get the award for the leadership one, it was just so satisfying, because it's, for me, it was very much about, let's challenge this notion of leadership, this definition of leadership. So to be recognised as a leadership book, that was, yeah, I was very, very happy with that.
What do you think it's starting to tell you about how the world is viewing leadership then?
Yeah, so I think, as you said, and there was another person on LinkedIn who said this, that quietly powerful leadership is becoming a thing, as you said. So I love that.
And, well, it is.
Yeah, so I think particularly through the pandemic and things like that, people are starting to see different styles of leadership coming forward and noticing the value of that. So I think there has been a bit of a shift. I'm sure Jacinda Ardern had an impact in terms of a different style of leadership too, but there's many others. Angela Merkel will be another. She's my pin-up for the quietly powerful leadership. So, yeah, I think just people being reminded of these different styles is fantastic.
Well, you should be really proud of yourself, because you are right at the forefront of creating that thing that is happening. And I just wanted to say thank you very much, Megumi, for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
One of the things I love about the podcast, I've said it before, is I get to learn about a particular idea, that being quietly powerful here, but also get to learn the backstory of human beings. And I think this is where we really connect with each other and we understand why someone is like they are today. And Megumi was extremely generous in sharing her backstory about moving three different countries, growing up in Japan, growing up in Australia, the cultural thing about being quiet and not speaking up, and how that shaped a lot of what she is today, as well as the whole idea of just being a bit introverted and having not as broad a range of vocabulary because she came from a different cultural background. Talking about how she was teased when she used to take certain foods to school, and her defense mechanism to not be teased and bullied was to be quiet. So that's sort of been with her for a very long time, as she said. I loved the simplicity of some of the things she shared today, like quietly powerful, and quietly powerful in the leadership sense is about giving space, not taking credit, and listening, reminding people that they're valued, and from an individual level, appreciate yourself fully. I also really enjoyed her thoughts around intersectionality and simplicity and complicated and the complex, that we can have both, and that there is both danger in turning the simple into complexity, just as there is danger turning the complex into simple. And that example she gave about diversity and inclusion was a great example there. So many brilliant ideas. I want to really encourage you to connect with Megumi on LinkedIn, as she said. Go and have a look at her website. Look at her book. Her book is incredible. I loved, as she said, the stories today, the real life story about the fellow she interviewed from the military, who was a quietly powerful style of leadership. And he was asked that simple question of, how do you deal with the more extroverted types like me? And he said, just tell them to shut up and listen. Sometimes it can be as simple as that. I suggest to you, and I feel very, very calm now after I've just recorded for 45 minutes with Megumi, because she's got this presence about her that can absolutely calm you down. So reach out to her, check her programs out, the virtual program she runs. Don't look at yourself as stereotyped as quiet if you go along, because as she said, there is value in being quiet. And regardless of how boisterous or bold or brash or loud or hard you might be, every human being likes some quiet. So it just might be that you can learn ways to bring quiet into your life, not just from a leadership perspective, but from a whole of life perspective. Hey, if you love this one, why not rate it 5 stars? Leave us a little comment about why you loved it. And if you liked it, share it with your friends. Get the message out there. Encourage them to subscribe. You're hearing from some real quality human beings sharing their expertise that I think, as Megumi said, she was once told could be life-changing. But until next time, keep it simple, keep it practical, and keep it human. Bye for now.